The large and destructive wildfires of recent years have certainly captured our attention, but we're often reminded that fire is a part of the natural processes of our region. The forests looked like they did when white settlers got here because of fire. The history certainly helps us understand fire in a broader context. Chris Chambers, the Forestry Division Chief at Ashland Fire and Rescue, will deliver a Southern Oregon Historical Society Windows in Time lecture on fire history this Wednesday in Ashland and next Wednesday in Medford, noon at the library, both places. He visits with details and a guest who can help flesh out some of those details. Belinda Brown is with Lomakotsi Restoration Project, where she's tribal restoration manager. Good to have you both back in the studio.
Good to be here. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Jeff.
So let's talk about fire history just generally. I mean, did anybody at the time white people were driving Native people off the land pay any attention to how fire had been used for thousands of years before that time?
Jeff, I believe that question is a very good question. It is how much they wanted to recognize that indigenous people shaped and used fire as a tool for management on the land. And for time immemorial, indigenous people have been on the land using fire as a tool, and they were very connected with that fire medicine for the land, and that's how they manage vegetation, that's how they manage the basket weaving materials, that's how we hunted, and even myself, I grew up putting fire on the ground for agricultural burning for how we managed the spring and the fall fires on large ranches, and Native people had a huge impact on how we manage fire like that. And being able to really connect the dots with the Western science and anthropologists such as Omer Stewart, and also with our people that have that indigenous knowledge. And being able to really marry Western science and traditional ecological knowledge and the indigenous burning practices is one of the things that Lomakotsi's been doing for a long time, for 25 years now, and learning from the elders and our tribal partners like the Yurok and the Karuk, and our tribe, the Ajimawi Otsege, that we continue to put fire on the ground to this day. So academia didn't necessarily recognize that indigenous people had that knowledge. However, in the early 60s, the anthropologists who'd studied and lived with us started documenting that. And so we have those, the history now. And Kat Anderson has helped put Omer Stewart's work into recent publications called Forgotten Fires. And I would really encourage anybody to read that book, Forgotten Fires, and then Kat Anderson has also put together a lot of other texts from fire ecology, the ethnoecology, and just a wealth of information now that shows that indigenous people had those tools, used those tools, managed the landscape. It was their Home Depot, it was their grocery store, it was their church. So it was very, very important and a well-managed landscape. And I believe now, as we look to the Western science and the traditional ecological knowledge and the indigenous burn practice of the people, as we look at what's happened in Australia, we know that when we remove the keystone species off the land, that we had a huge impact on that land. So we work together now to try to bring that back and try to manage the land in a responsible manner with fire.
Chris, over the course of your career in firefighting, has there been a change in approach and a willingness to acknowledge history that goes beyond just the history of American, modern Americans on the land?
Yeah, indeed. And I've felt that just in 20 years of working in fire. You know, you learn about that some in modern forestry school, but you don't get really exposed to it until you're out there in the field working, and then you start to encounter groups like Lomakotsi, who's working with tribes, and then you start to run into the tribal members themselves who are out there actually doing this work on the ground. I had the pleasure of getting to know Frank Lake, Dr. Frank Lake, who's lives in the mid and lower Klamath area and is now a scientist with the Forest Service, but he's bridging that world between science and traditional knowledge and showing that that knowledge can be reclaimed and applied proactively on the landscape in the way that we manage fire, both wildfires as well, and more importantly, using fire outside of the main worst part of fire season now. Although fire does even have a role during that that hotter part of the year too, But with not today without some serious consequences. But that has changed. And when we start to look at the historical context, tribes had been living on the land and managing fire for well over 10,000 years, arguably way more than that, according to some folks. And, you know, modern European settlers and colonized the area 170 years ago. And so just in the numbers alone, the accumulated knowledge of how to live on the land and live with fire would point to the tribes to say, we need that knowledge right now. I mean, we are in mission critical for what we do in our communities and our forests for our lives in Southern Oregon, Northern California, at least in the listening area, but that also spreads across the Western United States, actually across the whole country, and how we, if we learn to live with wildfire on the landscape, because our current paradigm is pointing us in a direction that is not so sustainable in living with fire. And we see that in the news in Australia right now. We see it in the news in California. We see it in Oregon with larger and larger wildfires having destructive effects on ecosystems, water supplies, habitat, communities, the air we breathe. So something really fundamentally has to change in the way that we relate to fire.
So we've tried to live without it, it sounds like, and it's coming back in a big way.
That was the grand experiment. And what happened after settlement in the 1850s is basically the tribes had done a really good job of learning to live and integrate fire and living dependent on fire. And then we've tried to exclude that for over 150 years, and that experiment has basically failed. And so as we have searched around for a different way to live with fire, we often forget to look and in history and also talk to the tribes who are still here managing fire now on the landscape and say, well, how did you figure this out for 10,000 plus years on the landscape? And that history tends to get pushed to the side. But we all need to do a better job of embracing that and taking the knowledge that's most applicable to our current situation and saying, how can we forge a new relationship with fire? Not one that necessarily means we're afraid of it all the time, but one where we embrace the role of fire and become dependent on using fire rather than just trying harder and harder to avoid fire.
Fire and fire history, the discussion topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Chris Chambers is the Forestry Division Chief at Ashland Fire and Rescue. Belinda Brown is with Loma Kotze Restoration Project, where she's Tribal Partnership Manager. Your questions and comments are welcome on the exchange at jx@jeffnet.org. That's the email. Phone number is 800-838-3760. I apologize. I said modern Americans. I was struggling for a phrase to not keep saying white people, but that was not intended. I did not mean to imply that anybody from a traditional society is not modern. You are very much that. So my apologies for that. I wanted to ask you, Belinda, about, you mentioned, you said cultural and agricultural in the same phrase, and there was a lot of cultural burning too, wasn't there? I mean, some real, you mentioned that the forest is the church as well as the Home Depot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the plants, even we had different words for fire where we hunted with fire. So we hunted and burned off mountains and ran deer like that. The grasshoppers, the insects were cooked with the fire. They were tasty little tidbits that the people enjoyed. And so there's the plants, and I would say that was one of the most, and currently modern day basket weavers are very adamant about how we burn to take care of those plant materials that they weave baskets out of. And some of the elders have actually scolded us because they can taste, they put the fiber in their mouth, they can taste the fuel that has been lit into those burns. And so we very carefully put fire on the ground and carefully manage the baja, the apos, the bear grass, and all those things. So hazel stalks come up really, really straight when you put fire on the ground out in our area over in Modoc County and Lake County and Harney County. We have the willows, and when you burn those willow patches, they come back really straight and nice. And so those type of basket weaving materials and foods that we gathered, the grasses before the cows came out in the areas where in Burns we had the Wadotica, they ate the grass. And so wherever we were, the acorns here, we had the oaks and the acorns, and they were managed by fire. So they kept down the disease, they kept down those insects, the noxious weeds. And so very, very carefully applied. And as some folks say, through the observation of actually seeing lightning hit the ground, that, you know, the people observed, and then they saw what happened when the lightning strike hit and the fire took off. And so with careful observation over time immemorial, you know, you see how those mosaic patterns go when the lightning strikes, and then the carefully applied fire here. There's the stories of just here in the Quakaka is what they called the plaza here in Ashland. It was where the crow flies, and they saw women rolling pine cones down the hill, lighting the hillside on fire. And so the other thing that we learn is that a lot of the women applied the fire. So we don't necessarily have the fire mavericks out there, you know, lighting things up, that we had very patient, qualified people putting that fire on the ground and tending the land in a very loving way.
And in an effort to mimic nature as well. All right. Chris Chambers, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who think, well, shoot, let's just light everything on fire now, you know, get it over. But this is not a situation that would work in today's forests.
No, we're really not advocating everybody in the public to just go out there and start lighting fires. But what we'd like to see is a groundswell of support for well-managed professional teams out there with the skills and knowledge, and in integrating more of the cultural indigenous perspective on using fire. And certainly we've been able to do some of that in the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project by having tribal crews come over and work in the watershed and in the hills above town, but we could also do a lot better job of that.
There are some things that need to have. Fire needs to happen. I mean, certain species of trees don't open their cones until there's fire. Is that right?
That's true. It's a process called serotony, where the cones are kind of sealed together by the pitch, and then they open, though we don't have that right in our backyard here. It is part of the Klamath Mountain ecology and up into the Cascades, and certain ecosystems need fire. Sometimes that fire occurred infrequently, and it was big, and it was hot, like in the cool mountain forests. But more and more, fire was frequent, and it was lower in intensity.
Because it was frequent, there was less stuff to burn each time.
Yeah, and that was where the tribes were there, lighting that frequent fire. And that matches up really well with the modern science inspection of fire history, which reveals that there was a lot of fire across the Rogue River Basin. A study done by Dr. Kerry Metlin and other authors here from the Nature Conservancy shows that fire returned about every 8 years as a median across the Rogue River Basin sites, and that's over millions of acres. There was a lot of fire on this landscape, and even here in our own backyard, the Ashland Watershed, there was fire every other year, and fire became a lot more frequent as you moved towards the village site down where the plaza is, because it was easy to burn there. It was necessary to burn there to protect the village and keep the buildup of fuels, and it's something that we have ignored for many, many decades to grave consequences.
Fire history, the discussion topic here on The Exchange with Chris Chambers and Belinda Brown. Here's a call from Reese in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
You're leaving out a small gap in the story, and that is that it requires a certain level of technology to really manage forests as forests, forest products. If you don't have saws, if you don't have lots of saws, certainly if you don't have chainsaws, then the timber and land really needs to be managed for the kind of resources that the Native Americans were using. And the pioneers didn't have those tools. They may have used them to make their own cabins, but even then they were cutting the trees down and burning up the stumps. When the Forest Service was first organized, there was a real conflict with the people who were European descent but living on the land, because the Forest Service was trying to save all the trees.
And all right, let me pick it up there and see what Belinda can help shed on this. Thanks for that perspective, Reese.
Thank you for that question, and I would agree with you that at this point in time, we do need to, like Chris was saying, clear the land. So everything that Loma Costa is doing is setting the stage to bring back good fire. So we do need to do a lot of work out there in commercial thinning and getting some small diameter logs out of there and working to really clear out the hazardous fuels and the debris so that we can bring good fire back. And the impact of the European settlers, I think there's a lot of people that use that fire. I know in the rural counties, there's still people putting fire on the ground. And so I think it's a combination of being able to set the stage, use the equipment, get the equipment in there in a good way so that we're doing ecological forestry. We're managing the land like we would our garden, like we would our backyard, and then being able to really marry the Western science and the traditional ecological knowledge so that we're all working together as a team to get this work done in our forests, so our forests can be healthy again and our communities can be healthy.
But Belinda and Chris, is a forest that has frequent fire the kind of forest that is also going to be a highly productive timberland?
Not necessarily. In some cases, yeah, the forest lands that burned were also highly productive. And in fact, an interesting point that's just come up pretty recently in the science, Dr. Paul Hesburgh has done a lot of work on this, and he's been here to SIU a few times in the past few years with his Era of Megafires show, is looking at where fire kept forests from becoming forests and how important the patchwork of non-forested area is to the functioning of the overall ecosystem and how fire interacts with the landscape. So maintaining meadows and maintaining grasslands that would otherwise grow productive forests, but they weren't because they had such frequent fire that burned the trees, the conifers out, and maintained woodlands and open habitats, are really an important part of the mosaic of forest and non-forest that limits the spread of wildfire over vast areas, which is happening now when we see fires burning in hundreds of thousands of acres. But I couldn't agree more with the kind of statement from Reese and Belinda's answer that, yeah, we have millions of acres of work out there that needs to be done using more modern forestry techniques, but to get us to a place where we can put that good fire back onto the land.
Just a few seconds left, though. I mean, is it easy to do that when you've got a lot of political pressure? I mean, fire scares people.
You know, I don't think it should be that contentious or scary in order to get out there and do it. We've been doing that for over 10 years now in our own backyard here of Ashland. It's happening in many places around the region in small pockets, but what we need to do is grow that to a scale that really matters on the landscape and is going to start to limit the effect of summer wildfire on our communities and habitats and resources out there that we care about.
Chris Chambers, Ashland Fire and Rescue, Belinda Brown from Loma Costa, thank you both for joining us today. Chris's lecture is called Fire History, Indigenous Burning to Recent Wildfires, What Have We Learned? That'll be this Wednesday at noon at the Ashland Library, next Wednesday at noon at the Medford Library. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.